Washington. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Gibbs Dube. Here are our top stories this evening. Take a Life International says it is concerned about the time it has taken to find three missing Chimanimani girls whose whereabouts haven't been known for more than a month.
That whole process is very spooky. It's very unusual. We don't know what played, but just to have a month with missing children, missing girls, is very worrisome in Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe says it needs $27 billion to implement its economic blueprint, the Zimbabwe Agenda for Social and Economic Transformation, ZIMASSET.
It's a very Herculean task for the government to secure that funding. I think the major problem is the fact that a government has a poor credit worthiness.
And we will give you an update of the World Cup. Stay tuned. Take a Life International says it is concerned about the time it has taken to find three missing Chimanimani girls whose whereabouts haven't been known for more than a month. The three girls, sisters Hazel and Tatenda Marirana, and their cousin Tildas Mutisis, were mysterious disappearance occurred after spending time in police custody when the mother of the sisters filed a police report and requested a medical exam after allegations of sexual assault by a local businessman. The girls' mother and aunt say police contacted them thereafter, saying the girls had been sent home. She alleges the children never returned home. Studio 7 spoke to Take a Life International Director Nyari Mashamombe, who says the organization is concerned about the missing girls.
We don't know what happened between the time they were released by the police. So what we're simply saying is that whole process is very spooky. It's very unusual. We don't know what played, but just for to have a month with missing children, missing girls, is very worrisome in Zimbabwe. I mean, Zimbabwe is known for its police competence, and we're wondering why it has taken a month, more than a month now, to figure that out, to find where the children are. So we're just saying, what is going on? We want the children back to their families. I think there are also stories that the children might have run away to neighboring Mutare. And we're still saying, how do we have children running to neighboring Mutare and they are still not yet found?
As an organization and also the community, have you lobbied to the police or authorities in regards to this issue?
We have been in touch with the Department of Social Services there, though they are still managing, I mean, such a case. When you're dealing with departments such as social services, they do not want to really divulge information. But what we're hearing is the children, they are the ones who are kind of telling us that it might be another story that the children are suspected to have run away. So, yes, we've contacted the Department of Social Services concerning the children, but we haven't been able to break through to police to find out what really is on the ground and what has gone on.
Is the family open to disclosing and maybe some information that can help the public in finding these children? And if any, what can you tell us?
We have actually just read about a report other people wrote about the mother who is reported to have shown concern to the very fact that her children haven't come back home yet. But we haven't had the opportunity to talk to the mother as yet.
That was Take Your Life International Director Nyari Mashamombe speaking with Studio 7's Tatenda Kumbo. Zimbabwe says it needs $27 billion to implement its economic blueprint, the Zimbabwe Agenda for Social and Economic Transformation, ZIMASSET. Government officials are quoted in the state-controlled media as saying they are engaging lending institutions like the World Bank, the African Development Bank and others seeking funds to implement the five-year economic blueprint. Economist Prosper Chitambala of the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu the government will struggle to raise the funds.
It's a very Herculean task for the government to secure that funding. I think the major problem is the fact that government has a poor credit worthiness because the government has not been servicing its past debt. So most creditors don't want to enter into more debt deals with Zimbabwe until we have actually shown commitment and begin to pay off part of the debt that we owe to both multilateral and bilateral partners. So it's not going to be very easy to secure that funding. And if we manage to secure part of the funding, we'll secure that funding at very, very punitive interest rates because of our poor credit history and poor credit worthiness.
The government is also saying it is expecting that most of the funds will come from internal sources through the establishment of a sovereign wealth fund, among other sources. What is your take on this?
Yeah, number one, it's the sovereign wealth fund, yes, it's a positive development, but it's not something that will give the nation a dividend overnight.
That was economist Prosper Chitambara of the Labour and Economic Development Research Institution speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. Civil servants in Zimbabwe on Friday commemorated Public Service Day by sweeping the streets of Shuruki Town in the Midlands Province. Public Service Day was internationally recognized by the United Nations in 2003. Reporter Jonga Kandemiri spoke to Apex Council Chairman Richard Kundani about this day.
We had a national gathering, a national launch in Shurugu in the Midlands Province, where we were commemorating the Africa Public Service Day. It was a very successful event, to the extent that the Minister of Public Service delivered this powerful keynote address. It was also an event where different departments in government were showcasing the different activities that they do. They were demonstrating their excellence in terms of delivering service through their different departments, including school pupils from schools showcasing their talents in art, in craft, in handwork, in dress and textiles and different things. Amazing work that the different public servants are doing out there. It was an occasion for us as the workers to celebrate the good work that we do, the excellence that we have achieved through the different work we are doing through the different government departments.
That was Richard Kundani, Apex Council Chairman, speaking with Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri. The 23rd Ordinary Summit of the African Union ended today in Sipopo, Malabo, in Equatorial Guinea, with African leaders recommitting themselves to eradicating poverty by investing in modernization of the agricultural sector to ensure food security. The leaders emerged from closed-door meetings with a promise to deal with conflicts on the continent and up their efforts to modernize not only agriculture, but the continent's infrastructure. Some of the issues discussed behind closed doors include the urgent need to fund the continent's rapid response army in conflict zones.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington. Did you know you can listen to web audio replays of our programs on our website and sign up for newsletters in English, Shona, and Ndebele?
Visit our site at www.studio7news.com. You can also give us feedback by text message. Our number is 1-202-465-0318.
A large number of Zimbabweans are now addicted to social networking sites on the internet, leading to conflicts at home as the traditional family structure crumbles. Ministers of religion, family heads, and others told Studio 7 there are some Zimbabweans that have been counseled due to Facebook addiction. For an insight on this issue, we turn to Reverend Hussein Smanda of the Zimbabwe Institute for Social Transformation.
The challenge with social media, Facebook and internet and other means in which people are communicating now, is that it's taking up a lot of time where people would spend time communicating to each other, especially within a family circle. And now, because of that, it is cheap, and it is the way in which people could connect with other people, you know, outside the family. People would now spend more time concentrating on that instead of talking to each other. And I think that is killing family time. That is killing time for even solving problems within families that people used to have before.
So what could be the solution here, Reverend Smant?
Well, I think that, first of all, people need to be aware that there is, you know, time to be on the internet, time to be on WhatsApp, and that time should be budgeted and be separated from quality family time that people have had previously. I've known people whom even during meal times, you know, they'll be on their phones, they'll be, you know, communicating with other people. And I think that should not be the case. We have some even extreme cases where, you know, people even within the family communicate with each other on WhatsApp and instead of talking to each other. So I think that creates a barrier, you know. It kills that time where people could open their hearts, time where people could listen even and find out, you know, what has been progress at school for their children, you know, are there any challenges within the family. That time is no longer there because people are spending it on WhatsApp, they're spending it on internet, they're spending it on Facebook, and talking to the rest of the world, but not to their own families.
But is there any way that this can change?
Well, I think it's difficult. It takes the change of attitude where people begin to realize that, I think previously we used to complain about television. We used to complain about, you know, time people take, to, you know, watching television and so forth. But the impact of Facebook and other means of communication is that you're actually talking to someone on the time. And I think the only thing that needs to be done really will be discipline between the people that that get addicted to this. I don't think there's any other way. And prioritizing family time, prioritizing time with friends where people could communicate, you know, face-to-face over, you know, the Facebook interactions that people are having.
How do you, let's say, for example, discipline a kid who is always on Facebook or a family member who is a bit old? You know, how do you do it?
Yeah, well, I think the other issue that is critical in this is I think we need to limit access to Facebook for our children, you know, by giving them phones at certain times and then maybe taking them away. But also for family members that are even older, I think there needs to be discipline where, you know, people could say, no, you know, it's having such a time, meal times, maybe times when people are doing homework, you know, we put away all the mobile phones, we put away all the devices that we use in social media. But one challenge that I've seen is when parents allow children to spend most of their time on Facebook and social media, in other words, they can get addicted to those you know, devices, and you have a challenge that even things that they encounter on social media, like Facebook and so forth, might not be the kind of things you want them to see or to interact with.
That was Reverend Useni Sibanda of the Zimbabwe Institute for Social Transformation speaking with Studio 7.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America.
Now we cross over to the Women's Desk with Marvelous Mhlanganyahunye.
Welcome to the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at issues affecting women, hosted by Marvelous Mhlanganyahunye in Washington. Today we are looking at a program launched by the Cancer Association of Zimbabwe to screen for cervical and breast cancer in rural women in Mudzi. We are lucky to have with us Amai Junior Mavu, the General Manager of the Cancer Association of Zimbabwe. Welcome to the Women's Forum, Amai Mavu.
Thank you very much.
Tell us about this program.
We are having a breast and cervical cancer screening project in Mudzi District. Mudzi District has 18 wards, and we have educated key members of those wards, the chief, so that when we then go for the outreach program, we can then communicate with them to say we are coming on such a day, and they can then spread the word, and we can then go and screen the women. At present, we are still screening at Kotwa Hospital, so they can get information or they can come and book at Kotwa Hospital, and then we can then go and screen them.
From what you're seeing on the ground, what is the ratio of breast cancer compared to cervical cancer, especially in the rural areas?
I think from the experience that we have seen during the course of this week, we have not detected any breast lump or any problems with the breast, but we have out of the people we have screened, about 100, we've seen two women that we think they've got cancer. But because your naked eye cannot diagnose cancer, we've referred them and we wait to see the results.
So what are the signs and symptoms, especially of cervical cancer?
Cervical cancer has no symptoms when it's initially. That's why we are advocating for screening. The pre-cancer cells can only be detected through screening. When you then find signs and symptoms like bleeding, backache, the cancer is advanced.
Do you have an age where you're advising women to go for cancer screening, especially of the cervix?
We are saying cervical cancer, any sexual active women can be screened for cervical cancer.
And does Zimbabwe have the machinery and also the medication to help cancer sufferers, especially cervical cancer?
Yes, in government hospitals, ministry or city clinics, they've opened via clinics where women can go and get themselves screened. And, you know, organizations like Cancer Association are also screening. So there are a lot of other organizations that are conducting the cervical cancer screening test. So, yes, there are facilities where women can go and have themselves checked.
And also we've seen in the past that some women were using herbal medications to tighten their women anatomy. What do you advise in terms of that kind of practice?
I think I wouldn't advise women to use herbs to insert in their private parts because, you know, God created us that way, so you don't need to add anything.
And also you mentioned that there's been a high incidence of especially cervical cancer in HIV-positive women. Take us through what you're seeing and what you advise those that are living with HIV and AIDS to do.
What HIV and AIDS does is it lowers your immune system. So once your immune system has been lowered, it means your body has no ability to protect itself. So things like cervical cancer or any other conditions might affect those people. So we are saying if you are living with HIV and AIDS, your risks of developing cervical cancer are high because your immune system is already compromised. So they should then go and have themselves checked up regularly to prevent some of these conditions to crop up.
Thank you very much, Amai Junior Mavu.
Welcome. Bye-bye.
That was Amai Junior Mavu, the General Manager of the Cancer Association of Zimbabwe. The Women's Forum was hosted by Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye from Washington.
Thanks, Marvelous. We hope you are going to have a wonderful day. And finally, in sports news, Brazil is clashing with Chile and Colombia versus Uruguay in the quarterfinals of the World Cup today. And the Netherlands clash with Mexico tomorrow, while Costa Rica take on Greece. For more details on the World Cup matches, follow us on Facebook and WhatsApp. Our WhatsApp number is 1-202-465-0318.
This time for Africa.
And now to recap today's top stories. Turkey Life International says it is concerned about the time it has taken to find three missing Chimanimani girls whose whereabouts haven't been known for more than a month. That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Kip Stewart in Washington, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.
Siyabonga Gibbs Dube. Siyamukela emsakazweni we Studio 7 ngomgqibelo omhlaka 28 ngoNhlangula 2014. Silethulela uhlelo lwezindaba zeZimbabwe sisakaza sise Washington DC. sitholakala emoyeni.